The next case to be heard is number 2015-1410. Albers East RV LLC versus Franklin County Board of Revision. First from the appellant, Mr. Petkovic.
Thank you, sir. Please the board, my name is Wayne Petkovic. I'm counsel for the appellant in this case. Case before the court is involves a 100-bed nursing home of about 28,272 square feet, located at 5500 East Broad Street. The property was transferred following a 20-year operating lease that the appellant had with the owner of the property. They had kind of a Hobson's choice. At the expiration of the 20-year operating lease, they were either to buy it or cease business. So there is an element of duress or involuntariness, if you will, with regard to this transaction. But nonetheless, there were other quantums of...
But you're not arguing against using... the sale price at all, you're arguing in favor of an allocated sale price.
Yes, I'm saying there was a Hobson's choice, but it would appear from the status of the laws enunciated by this court that that really doesn't militate against a sale price in terms of the going concern. What we're talking about is the various quantums of value that were enmeshed in the entire transaction. Now, school board filed a complaint with the Board of Revision asserting that about $7,400,000, which was indicated on the commands form, should be the value of the real estate. That was rejected by the Board of Revision, and the Board of Revision took that total and subtracted therefrom the indicated tangible personal property. It was indicated in the appraisal report, which was Exhibit A of Mr. Coon. With regard to the issue before this board, and the Board of Tax Appeals, our main argument was that there was intangibles by virtue of licenses, there was real estate, and there was personal property. There was also some business value, and I know the court has addressed that in different ways. Usually indicating that what was classically called as goodwill was a real estate value. So that was minimal compared to the value of the licenses, which was $1,800,000.
But now on the conveyance fee statement, the entire $7.4 million was reported as consideration for the rent.
Not unusual, Your Honor. It's a 12-page form. People don't understand that they're out of state, and these were out of state entities. So, I mean, it's... I have been giving people the caveat for probably 40 years to be very, very careful what you put on that 12-question form. Sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. But in this particular instance, it was provable that there was, in fact, license value.
What is the proof in this record? What documentary proof is there that more than the realty transfer?
Attached to the reply brief of the appellant is a case from New Albany that involved 5151 as an entity. If you look at that in Arbors East, which is the decision in this case, both involved nursing homes, both in Franklin County. The one in New Albany was a 112-bed nursing home, and the one in issue today is a 100-bed nursing home. And the decision from the New Albany case, the Board of Tax Appeals specifically indicated that an appropriate way to ascertain the value of the various components of value was to start with a going concern value, which Mr. Coon used, the $7.4 million in this case.
Sorry to interrupt you here, but you're skipping over my question. My concern is, what documentary evidence is there in the record that more than the real estate, other than some personal property or that was reduced by the Board of
Appeals? Well, we have the appraisal report indicating a going concern value. We have the Supreme Court decision and the Kenwood case, which is cited in our brief, where the court itself recognized that when these properties sell, there's more than just real estate that is transferred.
When I looked at the appraisal report, I saw the purchase agreement was attached to it.
Yes, sir.
And it referred to what was being transferred as the leased property, which referenced the lease, but I didn't see the lease.
Well, and also there was the paragraph in there that indicated the personal property ownership interests and other property. And I think that was...
Is that in that
seventh or eighth page, I believe, in there.
Okay.
So if you look at the decision that's attached to the reply brief, in essence, you've got the same kind of property. Now, what the Board of Tax Appeals in this instance did that they did not do was simply said, we are not going to pay attention to any extraneous evidence other than this one-page form, and we're going to put whatever value is on that form as an absolute in terms of the fair market value of the real estate. The Board of Tax Appeals in this decision first said because of said that at first they were going to give lip service to the Supreme Court and said, what we've got to do is we've got to make a determination based on the corroborative indicia or the best evidence available. In the very next paragraph, before they had their little tagline of what they found the value to be, they said, oh, we want unequivocal evidence. So you have one standard of review, you have another standard of review. And I would submit the definition. I looked it up and found a whole bunch of different ones for unequivocal, and it seems to me to be more of a criminal standard of beyond a reasonable doubt. If anything is based on an appraisal report, it's not going to be unequivocal. There is always some subjectiveness to it, and it's up to the forum to determine what it's going to do with the evidence before it. You simply can't ignore it, and the court...
I guess the concern is looking at this case from sort of perspective of being new to it. The situation is that there's a long-term lease. The lessee purchases under an option that was presumably in the lease. And it's just difficult to imagine that this lessee who becomes a purchaser was leasing this intangible property or the certificates of need, or it seems like a difficult inference, and that's why I'm looking for evidence.
The certificates of need were vested in the landlord.
Okay.
Certificates of need are granted by the state and they're site specific.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, they can be transferred, but they have to be transferred according to the rules of the state of Ohio. The state of Ohio is interested in is that there's a dollar per, or about a $10 a day or $11 a day charge for every day with regard to that license that's issued. So one bed would have 365 days times $11 or whatever the current rate is. The general principle I think that you have to look at here was enunciated by the court in the Sabina case, which is cited in our brief. Paragraph 25 of this court said, the principle of general importance is that the BTA has the duty in a real property valuation case to independently weigh and evaluate all evidence properly before it. Now, the appraisal report was obviously properly before it. It's part of the statutory transcript, sworn testimony with regard to that, cross-examination with regard to that. Instead of looking at the evidence before it, the Board of Tax Appeals simply cavalierly said, we're not going to look at anything, we're going to look at the sale. But even at that, what they did, as this court has said on numerous occasions, is they simply can't be a rubber stamp for either the auditor's value or the Board of Revision's value. They have to apply some intuitive deliberation to whatever is in front of it. In this case, they did nothing. But what they did do was affirm the Board of Revision, which had already rejected the total sale price as the value of the real estate. So, you know, at this juncture, there has been no determination with regard to the various quantums, but the indication is in Mr. Good's report that there was at least $1.8 million in certificate of need value. If you look at the case involving Thistledown, the court looked at a $43 million sale of a racetrack. There were gambling licenses involved in that. And they had expert testimony with regard to that transfer. And they said $27 million of that is not real estate. $27 million was the value of the licenses themselves. Now, I submit to the court, and respectfully submit to you, that the construction of a nursing home, especially one of this size, which is about 283 square feet per room, is not really conducive to an alternative use. It's either going to be a nursing home or it's going to be whatever. If it was very close to a college campus, it might be a dormitory. I don't know. But it's got beauty parlors and it's got other things that basically designed for that specific type of financial endeavor. So in this particular instance, you've got evidence that was overlooked or ignored that says, okay, what we do, we start with the going concern value. Now, that particular format was accepted by the Board of Tax Appeals in the New Albany case attached to the reply brief, but not in this one.
Was that a case where a lessee purchased the property from the lessor?
No, sir. I don't think that involves a lessee of that sort. I think that was an outright purchase. but in this instance, if you look at this transaction, logic would dictate, first of all, the county auditor, using the same methodology that he valued other nursing homes in Franklin County, came up with an original value of $4 million. Mr. Coon's net value to real estate items only was about $4.65 million. So obviously he was higher than what the county auditor had determined using the county auditor's appraisal methodology. With regard to the idea that the board wants unequivocal evidence, I don't know what type of unequivocal evidence there would be. The sale obviously was not unequivocal. The Board of Revision found it not to be unequivocal. This court, as I indicated, in the Kenwood case, said that it's not unequivocal in terms of the fact that it's widely known that these types of properties involve the sale of more than just real estate. There is a business component to it. The court on numerous occasions, as I cited in the brief, has indicated specifically that you have to separate these components of business from real estate. And the only thing that we're taxing in this particular instance is going to be real estate. I'd like to reserve what time I have left for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McKinley. Ms. Fox.
Yes, thank you. Carol Fox with Virgin Gillis Law Group here today on behalf of the Board of Education. Just to clarify, the New Albany case that has been referred to multiple times in argument today did not involve a sale at all. That was simply a case where the property owner had filed for a reduction and presented appraisal evidence, and then the school board had presented its appraiser. The decision clearly states there was no sale there, and the analysis that's applied in that case is strictly applied to what's proper appraisal methodology. It has nothing to do with the sale.
What about the state of the evidence in this case?
Why should
BJA not accept the appraiser's understanding of this transaction?
There are a lot of claims in this case that have absolutely no support in the record, Your Honor. We had no person who was involved in the sale who ever appeared to talk about the circumstances of the sale. The claim of duress was never even made at the Board of Revision. I'm not sure if it was raised at the Board of Tax Appeals, but that's a new argument. Nobody testified with regard to the sale that had any personal firsthand knowledge about it. The appraiser claimed to have talked to somebody. We don't know who that person was. We don't know if that person had any firsthand knowledge about the sale. And that testimony was properly objected to as hearsay evidence at the Board of Revision. As you mentioned, the documents that are in this case contradict the claim that there was more involved than real estate. The documents, in addition to the conveyance fee statement, include the purchase contract. As you stated, the purchase contract specifically says what is being purchased is the leased interest. If you listen to the Board of Revision hearing, although we never got access to the lease, as you noted, that was never provided, it was never in the record, the appraiser was asked if he had seen it. He said yes. The Board of Revision specifically said what was the leased fee, what was being leased. According to that document, was it more than real estate? The appraiser said no. It was real estate only. So even the appraiser's own testimony contradicts his methodology and the claims that were made by the owner's counsel. Again, counsel's arguments are not evidence. Information that's submitted by the tax agent, not the owner, is not reliable evidence as to what the circumstances were for this sale. With regard to the Board of Tax Appeals' treatment of the evidence, they absolutely did not disregard any evidence in this case. Unlike some of the recent cases that this board has seen, this is not a case where the BTA said, there is an appraisal, but we're not going to look at it or consider it because there was a sale. That's not what happened here. The Board of Tax Appeals carefully went through all of the information that was provided. They looked at all the documentary evidence. They considered the testimony. They referenced the testimony that happened at the Board of Revision. And they talk about the appraisal. The basis of Mr. Kuhn's appraisal was taking the sale price and making deductions. But they didn't prove step one. The first part of their burden of proof was there was something more than real estate included in that sale price. They did not meet that burden of proof. So it would be absolutely improper for any deduction to be made, especially a deduction that would be based upon an appraisal, an appraiser who had no personal knowledge about the sale. With regard to the Board of Revision's decision, they did deduct about $287,000, I think, and they based that on what was a Schedule D income tax form that was in the very end of Mr. Kuhn's appraisal report. It was not part of his analysis. It was included as an exhibit, and that's where that number came from. The Board of Tax Appeals had a duty to perform a de novo review because there was a sale here. They had to take a new look at this, and they determined that the owner did not meet step one of its burden, which was to prove that there was anything other than real estate involved. If you looked at the actual purchase contract and the language that was included, the only possible thing that's included there as an alternative to real estate is on page 4, where it says the items that were to be delivered by the seller, one of those items was a bill of sale conveying, quote, the applicable landlord personal property. But there was no bill of sale attached. Therefore, the applicable landlord personal property, according to what is in the record, was nothing, because there was nothing attached. If there was, in fact, personal property, intangible or tangible, it should have been provided in documentation from the actual sale. It's improper to go back and look at an appraisal. This is not even a case where we have an appraisal that was prepared contemporaneously with the sale, as we've seen in other cases. This is an appraisal that was prepared years later for purposes of the tax appeal. And the other important thing to note is that all of the cases that have been referenced in brief and today in argument by opposing counsel, whether it's Dublin Senior Community, whether it's Healthcare REIT, whether it's the Warrensville Heights case or the BTA case, in none of those cases was there found to be a recent arm's length sale. In each of those cases where there was a sale, the sales were rejected outright, whether they were an auction sale, a bankruptcy sale, a sale that was too remote from the tax lien date, or a purchase of a note, which wasn't even a sale. Only because those sales were rejected and not found to be arm's length sales did they get to step two, which was looking at the appraisal and how do you value the property and how do you account for the business value. In this case, the tenant bought the property. You've already pointed that out. They were already running the business. They were already operating this business. There is nothing in the record to demonstrate that they didn't already own everything with respect to the business.
They were operating it under their own name, correct?
Yes. Yes. This case is much more like Knickerbocker, where the evidence was at best contradicting itself, certainly not clear or unequivocal, I can't even say it. And because of that, the BTA properly determined, made a factual finding that the owner had failed to meet its burden of proof, that the owner had failed to provide sufficient evidence to prove that there was anything other than real estate involved in this sale. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fox. Mr. Petkovic, 2 minutes, 19 seconds for rebuttal, sir.
With regard to the contention of counsel with regard to whether or not there's a sale in these previous cases or not, since 1848 in T. versus Hewitt, the state of Ohio has never taxed non-realty as realty to begin with. And all the cases that go back and emanate all the way from the Roseville Pottery cases in the 1940s still talk about only valuing real estate. Article 12, Section 2 said it has to be done by uniform rule. With regard to the fact that there's a differentiation between a property that's sold and the value of the real estate in a bulk transaction and property that did not sell in a bulk transaction or not a bulk transaction, I refer the court very specifically to a recent decision, Columbus City Schools Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision. It's a 2016 Ohio 757. At page 19 of that decision, the Supreme Court specifically stated as follows. At the outset, it should be noted that it is permissible to rely on information contained in an appraisal report and an appraiser's testimony to find that the presumptive validity of the using the sale price has been rebutted. We have held that the appraiser's certification of the appraisal report, in particular the factual statements contained in it, forms a sufficient basis to permit the use of such information in determining value. And they say that AP Hotels versus Illinois. And we conclude that the sworn statements of an expert appraiser at a hearing in conjunction with his appraisal, or in conjunction with his appraisal report, can by extension serve to rebut the presumptive validity evaluation of the property at issue based on its prior sales price. Now, I can recall a case I had here 4 or 5 years ago where one of the justices in his dissent cautioned all practitioners in tax work to get an appraiser. And this is specifically what we did here. And here's the court itself just recently saying that you can rebut a sale with an appraisal.
Thank you, Mr. Petkovic. This case will be submitted. The court will advise the parties of its decision and will now take a 10-minute recess.
All rise.